Okay, we're getting recorded, even better. So thank you to everyone here for joining our continuing series on anti-racism, which I think we've all just really appreciated the opportunity to think about this in a different way. Take some time, and thank you very much to Laura again for really helping move us forward, and to Dr. Polk, who's joining us again as we move forward. So Laura, over to you.
Yep, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Polkey. So as you all know, every month we set aside a little bit of time for us as a section to reflect on how we can be more inclusive, more diverse, intentionally anti-racist. And so this is the third of three sessions that we've had with Dr. John Polk, who's the Associate Dean of Diversity and Inclusion here at BU. And we were very fortunate to have him spend some time with us. And we've had two sessions he's gonna briefly summarize, and then we'll have time to reflect on what our thoughts have been over the last few months, as well as talk about a new article that we have, hopefully you've had a chance to take a look at. So Dr. Polk, thank you very much for leading the session.
So thank you very much for inviting me. I'd like to welcome everybody to the third and final session. We realize that this is a difficult topic, but we think there's lots of growth, as we'll talk about later today. I have a confession to make. At one point in time, while I was a medical student, I wanted to be a hematologist. I was recruited to BU by Lou Sullivan, who served as my mentor and still is my mentor today. And I can remember Lillian Tallarico smoking those little Perotti cigars, walking across the campus. And Shava Chapman, who's still at BU, who I don't think she's in your section anymore. She works in women's health now, but she was a fellow when I was a medical student. So at some point I got misdirected and ended up being a surgeon. So that's that story, and I'm sticking with it. So can you hear me? Can you hear me? I can't see me.
Yes, we can hear you.
Good, that's fine. So you invited me to help you with what I consider a growth problem concerning a challenge of racism or perceived racism on your part in the clinic. You know, we chose to frame this outside of the context of racism because for several reasons. One, that's a very difficult space to work in because of the emotional baggage that people have associated with it. There are other ways to address this problem, and we've chosen to do that in terms of looking at leadership, respect, empathy, compassion, and courage. Let's be frank. And as you will see, if you had the chance, I don't know if Laura actually gave you the article from R. Roosevelt Thomas. On.
I didn't send that out, but I'm going to send it out afterwards okay. For them to read next month.
Yeah, there was written in 1990 about you know, affirmative action and going from affirmative action to affirming diversity. In which he described, you know, recruiting people for working in diverse environments was going to be distinctly different from what he labeled managing diversity. And that's a challenge that we're all struggling with today is how do you manage when you get, we know about the benefits of diversity, right? But as Scotch Page says, how do you get those benefits of diversity? And Thomas says you really have to be able to manage these diverse environments to get the most out of them. So that's where we are, and you're not alone in addressing this struggle. So review, during the first session, we talked about some ways to frame this and some tools to use to address this issue. And we talked about mindfulness. We looked at that article called Mindfulness, Why It Matters. We talked about the importance of respect in the essay, Do Your Employees Feel Respected? And we talked about the benefits of having employees feel respected. We also mentioned emotional intelligence. And when we talk about emotional intelligence, we're talking about self-awareness, self-management, and relationship management. The second session, we moved on to you as leaders. I work with physicians all the time who don't see themselves as leaders, but other people see them as leaders. So if that's their perception of you, how do you address that perception? Again, we talked about self-awareness and how to cultivate it, and we talk about behaviors that people look for in leadership. So having covered these, what I consider seminal topics in this area of I'm not going to call it racism, but functioning in a diverse team, what's been you guys' experiences having thought about this mindfully, having this brought to your attention? What observations have you made and what experiences have you had as you've gone back into that clinic environment? Would you share that, some of these experiences with us?
Yeah, and I'll also remind you all that last month we had suggested in the last session that asking for feedback is really one of the best ways to figure out how you're being perceived by your colleagues and by the people that you work with. And so, you know, we had challenged people to actually go and do that. And I was curious if people did it or, you know, why or why not, and what your thoughts were on that. So thinking back over the last few months on your reflections and, you know, what you've been thinking about these topics, like, what has your experience been? And again, did you go and ask for feedback from colleagues or people that you work with?
When I do individual coaching around issues like coaching of individuals around issues like this, at this point, I ask them about that. Tell me about the landmines that you didn't step on as a result of the growth that and the education that you've had around this particular issue.
So I'm happy to start us off, but then I'd like other people to chime in. So I actually did. I made an anonymous survey for people in my team to fill out about how I show respect to my teammates, to the people in my lab. And I told them, like, you know, please feel free to, you know, what are my strengths, what are my weaknesses? I know this is hard to ask for, but it's really important. What struck me the most is how the little things are how they see me being respectful. So things just like the fact that I actually, you know, talk to each person in lab, and that I greet everyone, and that I send my grant proposals to every single person in the lab, even the undergrads. And I was surprised to see, like, just being very, broadly soliciting feedback from everyone and talking to everyone makes a really big difference in me to be respectful in the workplace. And again, sometimes you don't realize what you do makes an impact. So I was wondering if other people had any thoughts on their experiences.
Laura, I will say, I started to do sort of the same thing, especially over in the clinic, and just being more mindful and more conscious. And it's actually just been great, because it seems like it's just a more friendly environment when you do that. So it's the little things that I think can make a really big difference. So very similar experience, actually.
So speaking of little things, it's been said that one of the most important things that a person will ever hear in their lives is their name. So one of the things that I get people to do in this situation is to address people by their names, find out what their names are and address them by their names. When I send texts and emails, I always put the person's name in there, and I put my name in there as well. I'd like to hear from some of the people that we haven't heard from. And I'm a great believer in pregnant pauses, so we can wait for you.
Hi, this is Hussein. So I actually joined faculty in September, so in the midst of COVID. And that was actually a big issue where everyone was wearing masks, and I needed to get to know, you know, all the infusion nurses, all the staff, you know, the MAs. And it was like, they would say their names, and you know, I would try to remember, but it's really hard, really, to not knowing them from before, putting you know the names to the faces. So that was kind of a challenge at the beginning. But then, you know, now I have actually the pictures in front of my clinic desk with the names. So I actually, yeah, that's gotten much better, and now I can actually. And it makes a difference when you address them, like instead of just saying good morning and just going. Saying good morning and then the name of the person just makes it more personable.
Thank you for sharing that.
I'll just add as well. Hi, this is Camille Edwards. I think I have a similar experience to what others have said so far, and I would just add that even persons that previously did not say good morning, because I say good morning to everyone, have started saying good morning to me. So it's a really important thing to be open and really communicate and be personal with everyone.
Thank you, Camille. Yeah, it's amazing to me how I think the environment will be so much friendlier if everyone just said hello. And again, when I was, you know, in my training, I never said hello to people. But now that, you know, I'm in leadership, I realize, okay, the more I can say hello and greet them by name, the more welcome everyone will feel. But it's a hard practice to get into if you're not used to it. And if you're so busy. Fabio, did you want to say something? I see you're unmuted.
Yeah, hi, this is Fabio. Yeah, along those same lines, in my case, I've been a little bit more aware of the long-term consequences of certain behaviors or potential behaviors. For example, you know, when addressing a colleague about some concerns, you know, I realized that I stopped for a second and really thought about how can I say this in a way that is both productive and that is not going to break the relationship with this person. And, you know, this is common sense, but I should say I was probably more careful about this.
Great, thank you.
So is anyone courageous enough to tell me about a landmine that they've not stepped on as a result of these conversations? And by landmine, I mean a potential disastrous situation that you averted.
So I guess this is just a relatively minor thing that wasn't necessarily a landmine as such, but I noticed that one of the it was a master's student actually who's working with me was addressing their emails as being to Dr. Morgan and to the other person in who was working with them, and using that other person's first name instead of their title. And, you know, as many of you know, I'm not the best at always using people's titles because I very much come from a background where it's not a professional requirement. And, but I thought this was quite a good learning experience for the student to just be sort of gently introduced into why in some circumstances this can be important. And, you know, the way to think about it is in terms of, you know, equal treatment rather than trying to second guess whether some people like their titles and some people don't and stuff like that.
Thank you for sharing.
We're going to address that point when we get into perceptions. thank you for that. And we're talking about little things, okay? You know, we're not talking about being overtly, quote unquote, racist or creating some, when I say landmines, I don't necessarily mean a huge explosion, but these little things. There's a concept in an oriental concept in Chinese called Lai Chi. It's death by a thousand cuts. And when I give a talk on stress and burnout in medicine, you know, it's not that single event that causes you to say, oh, I'm done, I'm quit, I'm leaving it, I'm walking out of this place, right? It's death by a thousand cuts. It's a patient encounter. It's an encounter with your superior. It's a bad outcome. It's all these little things over a period of time that really wear on you, which is part of what we do. It's part of the fatigue.
Yeah, and I agree that these are usually cumulative problems, but I also feel that, or at least that's what I've been learning in my previous experiences, is the importance of that first contrast with a person that can really change the trajectory of the relationship. And you know, you can apologize and you can explain, but the relationship changes, and sometimes it's for the best, but I think there is like the first misunderstanding between two people leaves a sign on the relationship. But I agree with what you were just saying, that it's usually death by a thousand cuts. I like that expression, but it starts with that first episode.
Yeah. For the sake of time, there was an article that I included in this program, that this workshop, but Laura thought it was a little too much. Is this whole idea of negotiating, and the article is really based on some work done by the people at the Harvard Negotiation Project that do international negotiating. And one of the first principles of negotiating is you have to see the humanity in the other person. If you can't see the humanity in the other person, then no matter what the issues are, you can't get beyond that. It starts you out at a different point. So that's why saying hello and acknowledging a person by recognizing their name or saying their name is so important, because you're recognizing this person as a person, not as another doctor, not as another nurse or technician, but as a person.
Kevin.
Yeah, I had an inside, obviously I'm mostly retired, semi-retired now, so I'm not in the clinic, but over the years, one thing I noticed, and even when I come back sometimes to visit in the clinic, is that people, the nurses and the front desk, really appreciate, and this is where it's hard because you're so busy, they appreciate if you hang out with them for a while and just talk over things, or you mention, you know, if you know anything about their family or what's happening in their life. And for instance, I came back and I'm usually like busy now when I come back, I'm on consult and running around, but try to get by the clinic. And one time I went and saw some of the people, but not all of the people. And then I forgot to stop by on the front desk, you know, and they, the nurse's aides, like, and they were like, they really noticed, you know, they said, I saw you were by, you didn't stop by and talk to us. And, you know, it's hard when you don't have that much time, but I know the nurses, for instance, they really appreciate it if you don't just send over orders and stuff like that, but you actually stop by and certainly talk about the case that they're managing, but also just to hang out a little bit, you know, it's really helps to make that time, I think, if you can do it.
Yeah, we're not great believers in medicine in the IOR investment in return, you know, return on investment, ROI rather. But and we began this conversation two sessions ago about a quote from one of your own who talked about how in a busy clinic, you know, in the name of efficiency and effectiveness, you can just speed up and that becomes a default. And that's where people feel like you don't recognize their humanity is when you speed up. And it's been shown time and time again in business that if you can get the respect of people that work for you, this is a leadership principle, right? They will cover you. Okay. They will, one of the old principles is, you know, how do you get when we do surveys in your department and we say, well, what percentage of efficiency are people working at in your department? Well, on average, it turns out to be somewhere around 60-65%, right? Well, the goal is to get 100%. Well, somebody says, well, it turns out that I can get 120%. How do you get that 120%, that extra 20%? Is you create the space for people to actually contribute more to that work environment than their actual job description. And how do you do that? Is by things that, like you just described. Yeah.
Yeah, I have made the mistake in my in basic research thinking that, well, I'm in lab, I just have to be working nonstop. And I've learned over the years that socializing, which to me seemed like a total waste of time, actually helps everyone feel more cohesive and supported. And it's been a much more, you know, productive way of spending my time, even though I feel like I'm wasting time. So I think that's pretty universal in terms of human interaction. Mm-hmm. All right. So Dr. Polk, we're running up. We're about the time period where we're going to have the talk about the article soon. So why don't you introduce that?
Good. So there's a whole big discussion among psychologists about the perceptions and the value of perceptions. And is perception reality or is it not? That comes from that political thing about perception is reality. Well, this article begins by saying perception isn't reality. But I hope you've had a chance to take a look at that article and think through it. And there are some basic, one of the feedbacks we got was that we really need some practical stuff to take away from this that we can actually apply in the clinic. And I think this article will help with that. So why don't we break up? We have how many people? We have 30 people. Why don't we break up into like three sessions, three groups, and discuss this article and come back in what, our 10 minutes?
Yep, we're all back now.
Good. So I had the opportunity to visit two of the groups, and the discussions were very engaging, and people were really contributing to the conversation. So can we start with some of the summary points that each group discovered during the course of those brief conversations? Who would like to go first? And tell us which group you were with. Oh, so why don't we go with group one first?
Charlene, you made some really good points.
I'm sorry?
You made some really good points. I was wondering if you'd be willing to share.
Oh, so no, I think that we just started to talk about perception. It was interesting because a couple of folks were talking about, you know, our perception and our reality, and is that really reality, you know, because it's our personal view and how this frequently can get in the way when we're interacting with people rather than to try to reach out and kind of engage with them and get a feel for how they're doing and how they're feeling. So, and just, you know, also trying certain things that, you know, rather than going up to people and just asking for things, whether it be in the workplace or, you know, at the grocery store and just to, you know, to be able to acknowledge them just even by saying good morning, good afternoon, I wonder if you could help me with, or something like that, rather than just saying, I need this, just to try to kind of engage with them better and get, you know, learn a little bit about the person you're dealing with, because these aren't entities, these are other human beings. So.
Thank you, Charlene.
Any other comments from group one? If not, we'll move on to group two.
I could probably summarize for group two. We had a really good discussion, I think. And I guess some of the things we're talking about, you know, Trump and the people who follow him, their view of reality being you know, their perception is really divorced from reality, like he won the election and stuff like that. And how can you bring people together who have such radically different views, but also how the perception versus reality thing relates to the idea of intention, good intentions versus what is the impact that you actually have. You have very good intentions, and how people get offended if you say, you know, well, that really hurt me, or you're a racist, or that was a racist thing to say. And you know, the white person thinking, oh my God, I'm a good person. I'm not, you know, a racist. I, you know, and then even getting to the point of getting angry at the other person for saying, you know, for calling them out, you know. And so, and then how can you get some view of the other person's perception? One is to actually try to be open to talking to people. And another thing that Julie put up, I guess, was like even at a meeting, you know, just saying ouch when someone says something might be stopping the meeting and saying, you know, no, we have to stop and talk about this now. And then also immersing yourself in literature and other art of, you know, Black people, created by Black people, to get perceptions that white people can do a lot of work on their own without asking a Black person always to bail them out, you know, and explain reality to them that they can work on their own.
Yeah, Kevin makes a good point of this whole concept of calling people out versus calling people in. And calling people in is based on empathy. You want to try and understand that person who says something that's really outside of your perception, we like to say. And it's helpful at times. And it generates less friction. Any other comments from group two? Group three, you're up.
If anyone wants to jump in, but I can certainly start. We had a really interesting discussion, and I think we were struggling a little bit with getting our heads around some of the issues. But one of the things that came up, you know, I think I'll try to explain it. You know, a sense it's you know, it's great. Everyone has different perceptions. Let's acknowledge different perceptions. Let's be sensitive to different perceptions. But then the flip side, what if some of those perceptions are really not so great? And the point was made in our group, if we're all tolerant of all these different perceptions, can't that propagate racist attitudes? And there seemed to be kind of a bit of a dichotomy there.
I have a friend who says, racism exists primarily as has its origins in an economic concept. And if you go back and look at it, he's probably right. So now the question is, do you have the right for economic reasons to treat me less than someone else? But now you know exactly where they're coming from. It may not change their perspective, or it certainly may not change your perspective, but you have a better understanding of the situation. And I think that's the beginning of change, is understanding.
Yeah, that was actually another point that we discussed in our group, that, you know, like, It's not just about understanding the differences, but why there are different perspectives around specific topics. Where is the other person coming from? What have been their previous experiences? And I personally, I think that's essential, because it there may be certain differences that may not be so huge to manage if one understands the reasons behind it.
Yeah, that's the old argument about the two kids fighting over the orange, and the parents. One of the parents says, "I'll fix this. I'll cut the orange in half and give each of them half the orange." Well, it turns out that probably wasn't the right thing to do, because one kid wanted the orange to get the surface of the orange, where you grate the orange?
The zest.
And the other kid wanted the orange juice. So that article, Getting to Yes, that book, Getting to Yes, talks about the person's interests and their stated principle. Well, the stated principle may be, I'm not going to give you this, but the interest is why. So always try to get to, Fisher always talks about in negotiating, when you're negotiating with someone, always try and get to the why, because the why may be an easy issue to address than the what.
Exactly. And I guess there are no excuses at this point in our lives not to recognize those whys, right? And I think we are all aware of why there are certain different perspectives. And so that's something we need to think about. It's not just about how we behave, but it's also how we understand the other party.
But remember the emotional default when you get, as one of your members said, in a busy clinic where you're behind, the default is sometimes not so easy to negotiate. You have to be mindful. You have to be respectful. You have to be self-aware, both internal and external self-awareness, how you see yourself and how others see you. This is a principle of leadership, and I'm talking to each and every one of you, not just Matt here. You're viewed as leaders. And remember, that's your perception. That other person has a different perception, and you have to, it's to your advantage to respect that perception, because heaven knows you could be wrong. I know that sounds strange to hear a surgeon say that. any other comments?
Yeah, we developed this concept in our group that, you know, it doesn't really matter who is right. You are right for yourself based on your own perspective, but it doesn't matter for the other person, right? If they have a different perspective. So it's not about who is right. You may be right or wrong, but that doesn't matter. The problem is, you know, what is the perception of the other person? And again, why they have that perception. So we discussed this concept of, you know, is there a true north, a real true north, or is it, you know, it is that concept not so relevant in this kind of discussion, given that again everyone has a different true north.
Remember, the Polynesian navigators navigated the entire Pacific without any knowledge of Greenwich Mean Time. Any other comments before I make my closing comments?
I think it is important to remember that sometimes there is an objective reality that is quite important. Like, yep. You know, if there happens to be a disease pandemic and there's a vaccine available, but your perspective is that it's all a hoax, then that's not just your problem. That's also a problem for the people around you. And, you know, fortunately, I hope not everything is quite as clear cut and drastic, but I think, you know, maybe as a scientist, I have an overly generous view of the idea of an objective reality, but I think it is important where there really is a ground truth not to necessarily lose sight of that.
I know, but actually using this example that I like a lot, because it's obviously very timely, Obviously there is a truth here, you know, that there is a pandemic and there is a vaccine and everything else. But, you know, the question is not whether vaccines are essential. The question is, why are certain people not willing to get a vaccine? Mm-hmm. And so, like, that's the, I think it fits what we were discussing. You know, why are certain people unable to understand how a vaccine works, why it is important? You know, we have been hearing about vaccines integrating in the genome and things like that. Why are those people thinking that way? Have they been sort of influenced by others? Maybe it's an education or literacy problem. Those are things that can be solved, that can be addressed, and are probably much more relevant than deciding who is right and who is wrong.
So, Gareth, let me try and address your question in my closing comments. I'm going to read this so I don't make a mistake. So Matt gave me a hard time about my Donald Rumsfeld quote. You know, there are known knowns. There are things we know we know. We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are some things that we do not know. But there are also unknown unknowns, the ones we don't know we don't know. I give you guys great credit for acknowledging this third area in addressing this problem that you have. But again, you guys are researchers, right? You guys are hematological and oncological researchers, right? So as in clinical research, as in life, this requires a certain amount of humility. It requires compassion, and it requires courage. It requires humility to acknowledge that you don't know, the compassion to understand the perceptions and the perspectives of others, and the courage to admit that you can possibly be wrong and are willing to change. That's the Alan Alda quote. My psychologist friends tell me this is a space where most growth and development occurs. And as someone who's over 70, let me assure you that you will continue, hopefully you will continue to grow long after this conversation. I'd like to thank you again for inviting me to help you with this. I hope I've helped you with this. But this is something that you guys have taken a giant step toward alleviating by those simple things that you described that you began to institute. And for those of you who haven't, I would encourage you to just try it and watch the expression on people's faces. The other piece of this is, so this began as a dialogue regarding faculty and staff in the clinic. So have you tried this with faculty to faculty? Have you tried it outside of the clinic? Just a couple of rhetorical questions. So thank you again.
Thank you very much, Dr. Polk, for your time. And thank you, everyone, for taking, you know, time out of your very busy schedule to join us for this. It's really important for us, again, to give us some space and time for these topics, and we'll continue to do so. We're going to take a break in August. People go on vacation, but I'll be sending you some really important reading materials, but then we'll start up again in September with more of these sessions. So again, thank you all for your time and attention. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody.